There's good reason for my glistening skin and how I shine and how my pores are so clean and clear. I eat little baby's ice cream. It keeps me young. It keeps me light on my feet. I spring from activity to activity. I love my job. I love my life. When you eat little baby's ice cream, you'll wink and nod and hug and high-five each other with great enthusiasm. This is a special time. Little baby's ice cream. Ice cream is a feeling.
Good evening, Michael Malice here with some fresh nightshade for you to melt in your microwave. I'm fresh back from Philly. I did have a chance to go to Little Baby's Ice Cream over the weekend. I stayed in Fishtown, which is very much a neighborhood that's reminiscent of Brooklyn, let's say 12 years ago. And I don't mean this in a pejorative way. It was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. There's a great denim and menswear store called Franklin and Poe, which I had a blast at. The funny thing about Little Baby's Ice Cream, which that was not a internet thing. That was actually an ad for their company, and obviously it's the kind of thing they're being a little try-hard. But Little Baby's Ice Cream is inside a pizzeria. So Pizzagate is real. And I also did a few live streams where I was walking down the streets of Philly, rambling nonsense. And if you watch those, they're on my Periscope. You could see me give the finger to various posters of Thomas Jefferson, disgraced former president Thomas Jefferson. But there's a lot to catch up on. And a first story, one of the things that has historically been the purview of the left is attacks on corporate America. Growing up, you always hear the corporations, the corporations, the corporations. And somehow the left has seemed to have forgotten about that, because now some of the corporations who have gotten smart and are positioning themselves as leftists, and it's like, oh, well, now we can't really attack the corporations. And the author of the book attacking the hidden history of public education, who's John Taylor Gatto, he had a great point in that book where he says that if corporations were human beings, they would effectively be sociopaths. I mean, their job is to use persuasion and, you know, whatever they can to get that money out of your pocket. So why not posture as someone who shares your values when their value is the pursuit of your business? And it backfires. JetBlue has apologized for honoring fugitive cop killer Assata Shakur earlier this week. As part of their Black History Month display in John F. Kennedy International Airport. Her real name is Joanne Chesnard. She was in the FBI's most wanted list for decades after escaping from prison in 1979, where she was serving out a life sentence for murdering a cop. She eventually fled to Cuba. By the way, Assata Shakur, she is a great example. I read this book called Days of Rage, which is an excellent book. And it talks about how in the early 70s, late 60s, there were literally like daily bomb threats and bombs going off across America because there were all these fringe radical groups. And what happens, and a great example, this is Che Guevara, these figures become mythologized and take on a life outside their own. So according to many of the people who were interviewed for this book, Assata Shakur was really kind of a nobody. But because she's like one of the few women involved in this, they kind of made her into this Virgin Mary figure. So, she was involved in this killing a cop. But in terms of her being this kind of great mind and great leader, that is just them filling their pantheon. So the quote said, "Our crew members come together to celebrate Black History Month with a display in Terminal 5 featuring prominent individuals in history." Oh, no, so my point being, so if you're a corporation and you don't know shit about Black history, you're just going to find the faces that are floating around, stick them on a poster, and now look, boom, you're with the program. So our crew members came together to celebrate Black History Month with a display in Terminal 5 featuring prominent individuals in history. When we learned of concerns regarding one individual, we immediately removed the poster. A spokesperson spokesperson from JetBlue told the Daily Caller. What's really funny about this is explicitly saying they've done no homework on any of the people they put up. They got a list. Okay, find me famous black people. All right, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. They made a movie about him. It can't be that bad. Okay, some lady, Harriet Tubman probably, I'm guessing. Sojourner Truth. Well, they named the space thing after her. So, and they just did not even the minimum of research. If they're going from the right wing, you really got to vet. Does this person have white nationalist ties? Have they been in the same room with Trump? Can't work with them. But like, oh yeah, Assata Shakur. In fact, the first thing you're going to learn about Assata Shakur is that she was a hardcore radical who was involved in killing his cop. Like, it's not like she had all, she wrote all these books and, you know, she was in Congress or, you know, this or that. No, no. This is her resume. This is the entirety of her resume. The statement continued, the intention was always to unite our crew members and customers around the importance of Black History Month, and we apologize for any offense the poster may have caused. You know, when I'm deciding which airline to fly, the question I have to ask myself is, what's their stance on history? And on Black history, and on Black History Month, because that's really what air travel is all about. Never forget. The Never Forget slogan refers to history. The poster had a picture of Assata Shakur and the following message. Civil rights activist and member of the Black Panther Party, regarded as a hero for her protests against racism and her role with the 1970s Black Liberation Army. That Black Liberation Army, to be Max Headroom, that wasn't some, you know, meetup. This was actually a militant group. Community advocate who helped the poor by organizing a free breakfast program and a health clinic, became the first woman. Oh, they had this. Wow. Became the first. I take it back. It's even worse than I thought. Became the first woman to be placed on the FBI's most wanted list after escaping to Cuba from prison, where she was serving a life sentence for the 1973 murder of a police officer. Wow.
So she's a pioneer for women.
Well, no, she's not the first one.
It said she was the first woman on the list, right?
Oh, no. Was she the first? Oh, you're right. Right. I thought you meant pioneer for being the first woman.
A true pioneer.
I thought you meant a first woman to kill the cop, which I don't think she is. Bonnie, what's her name, probably did. Bonnie and Clyde. Many people believe Shakur to be a political champion who is innocent of the criminal accusations against her. This is just leftist propaganda from JetBlue. Well, that's why they're called JetBlue. Many anti-police organizations and activists celebrate Shakur and use her as a symbol of resistance, including the Women's March and former CNN commentator Mark Lamont Hill. So it's just the asymmetry in the culture war is enormous. There will be no repercussions for JetBlue about this. For someone who was in jail for killing a cop and then escaped jail and went to Cuba. So keep in mind that a lot of these things are just propaganda trying to impose a point of view on middle America. And you know what else? This stuff is taught to your kids in school, and you have to take them there, and they have to learn this, and they're going to think, why would my teacher lie to me? Okay, that's number one. Number two, dramas across the pond with Theresa May. Jeremy Corbyn, head of the Labour Party, told Labour MPs the party will move to back another vote if their own deal is rejected in 2 days. Emily Thornberry of Labour said, if the parliamentary process ended with a choice of no deal or Theresa May's deal, the public should decide. Theresa May's under growing pressure to delay the March 29th Brexit date. Lauren Koonsberg, she's the BBC political editor, said the Labour leadership knows there does not seem to be enough support in the House of Commons for another referendum. Meaning, they're saying this explicitly, it might be a free hit they never have to deliver on while showing party membership that they tried. In a way, this is kind of like Trump in the wall, in the sense that's like, if I declare an emergency and the courts strike it down, well, did my best. It's not my fault. Clean hands. So it's like, yeah, we're going to call for another referendum, even though there's no way of it happening. But, you know, at least we can go back to our base and say we tried. Our hands are tied. They have not yet made clear what their referendum would be on, but a party briefing paper says that any referendum would need to have a, quote, a credible leave option and remain. The prime minister, who will update MPs tomorrow on negotiations, has insisted the UK can still leave next month as planned. The UK voted to leave the EU in June 2016. And May's been negotiating with the EU, but suffered a huge defeat by them last month. And she's ruled out a meaningful vote on her Brexit deal this week, saying it would be held by March 12th, which will give her MPs a chance to have their say on how the next steps for Brexit should be run. They will also be able to table amendments to a government motion, putting forward their proposals on what they think should happen next. The idea, like I've said in the show many times, the idea you're going to have a majority on any one plan seems impossible. I can't even begin to wrap my what that would look like, my head around what that would look like. Because you have the two halves, Leave and Remain, and within each of those party halves, you're going to have different worldviews. So I don't see how you get to a majority. Corbyn told his MPs that she is recklessly running down the clock in an attempt to force them to choose between her bad deal and a disastrous no deal. That's not true. That lower third is a lie.
I'd love a link to, well, you know, to see that.
I know you would, Drew. I know you would. He said Labour would also put down an amendment this week setting out its plan for a comprehensive customs union and those and close alignment with the single market. The amendment also sets out guarantees on rights and standards and a security agreement which guarantees access to the European arrest warrant and vital shared databases. Labour's also said the party will support a cross-party amendment proposed by Yvette Cooper from Labour and Oliver Letwin from the Tories designed to rule out the prospect of a no-exit deal. And Corbyn said, one way or another, we will do everything in our power to prevent no deal and oppose a damaging Brexit based on her overwhelmingly rejected deal. That's why, in line with our conference policy, we are committed to also putting forward or supporting an amendment in favor of a public vote to prevent a damaging Tory Brexit being forced on the country. I like this being forced. There was a vote. The vote said leave. She pulls the trigger. They're going to leave. Well, we can't force this on our country. It's like we're going to do democracy until we get the result we want. And then, okay, that was the real answer. At their conference last fall, Labour's backed a policy of keeping all options on the table, including another referendum, if it couldn't force a general election. By the way, I've been watching the polls in the UK, and since those members left the Labour Party, Theresa May's Tories have opened a very significant lead for the first time since the last election, which was, I believe, 2017? Like 7 to 8 points. So that is a very big deal. At the same time, when she called it, she had a huge lead and blew it. So who knows what would happen if it actually came through. But that's just where the polls are at the moment. Labour MPs believe the party has been distancing itself from that comment after it failed to win a vote of no confidence against the government last month. And as I said, 9 Labour MPs quit the party last week. Finally, Shadow Brexit Secretary Keir Starmer insisted the party would deliver on its promises, and the shadow foreign secretary, that's Labour's foreign secretary, told the BBC, what Theresa May wants to do is just get herself into a position where she says it's my deal or no deal. We think both of those are disastrous, and so we will see what it is at the end of the parliamentary process, whether we are facing no deal or disastrous Tory Brexit, but either should go before the public, and we need to have the people to break the logjam. This is going for the public. That's what representative democracy means. The parliament represents the people. This is bullshit. But it's going to be, she's such a bad leader and he's such a disaster. So who the hell knows how this is going to end up? But it's going to be absolutely, absolutely hilarious to keep track of, which I will, of course, be doing. And now, these pretzels are making me thirsty. It's time for a segment. We just had one last week, but I really love this segment. And I know you do too. It's time for God's Mistakes. Now, take a look at this child murderer dressed as a nun. What are God's mistakes? He doesn't know. All he knows is how to dress like a nun in order to murder children. But you and I know that God's mistakes are the most effed up forms of life. And here's a species that I only learned about today while doing homework. Now, many of you are familiar with the praying mantises, also known as mantids in scientific terms. Put up the name of the teleprompter of the genus, Peter. I wrote it in the email. I forgot what it's called. These are known as dragon mantises. Now, mantises, some of you are familiar with. The regular ones are the green ones. Then you have orchid mantises. Drew, put up a picture of an orchid mantis, O-R-C-H-I-D. Orchid mantises look exactly like orchids. And they live on orchids, and they prey on their prey. Mantises are hardcore predators, and they're very intelligent. In fact, I caught one in college and had it in a tank. And when that thing made eye contact with you, it was very, very, very disturbing. Yeah, that's an orchid. Well, get a photo of an orchid mantis on an orchid. You could see, yeah. It's just amazing. Even the eyes, you can see, are petal-shaped. Their closest relatives are the cockroaches. And, you know, mantises have their forearms like this with barbs on the inside, which cockroaches have as well. Now, there are things called ghost mantises, which are extremely elongated. Today, I learned about the dragon mantis. It's a genus called Toxodera, and it's only found in Southeast Asia. We have a few clips. This is what they look like as nymphs, which is the young, the first video. And you can see they look just like dried up leaves on a branch, even the way they move. That is them, that's not the wind. That's them intentionally moving back and forth to look like dried up leaves on a branch, waiting for prey to get close. I should also point out that mantids are highly cannibalistic. So you'll have the egg, I forgot the term for it is, you'll have 500 of them, and they're eating each other like crazy. And of course, very famously, mantises eat each other as a means of intercourse and copulation. So that's what they look like as nymphs. Now here's a video of what they look like a little older. There's a mantis in there. Even though you can kind of see the antennae, it's still hard to make out where the body is. That's it on a branch. See, look at that. Look how elongated it is. The guy's taking it off. And how stretched out the abdomen is and how far apart the legs are from the forearms, or the forelegs, I guess technically you would say. Look at that. It looks exactly like a curved branch. Down to the coloration, everything. You could barely see the head. That is very, very... God clearly made a mistake with this one. That's why he wanted to hide it. Now, the next one... We have one more or two more videos. One more. The next one, after this is done... This is a species that was only described... Don't play yet. This is a species that was only described in 2009. So the thing is, a lot of these species, they'll be known to science, but no one scientific officially describes them, or no one ever sees them. So this is Toxodera bayeri. This is from 2009, from Southeast Asia. Look at this thing. And it is not small. Hit play. That's how they move. You can't even make out where the head is. Like, if anything, the tail looks like the head because it's got leaves on it or something, like decorations. It is, the legs are almost invisible. They look like branches. It sways like a branch in the wind. And if they get attacked, I've seen videos of like little tarsiers, which are proto-simians, little monkeys, like the size of, let's say, a squirrel, go after these things. And those mantids go straight for the eyes and chase them away. They are fearless and they have no souls and no remorse. So this is just absolutely terrifying stuff. I learned about this today. Oof, can you imagine that crawling in your kitchen? And the thing is, when they walk on you, I felt it. Like, it's so tingly. It's very, very, very disturbing stuff. So that is our God's mistake lesson of the day. And now our last story. Are we going to be a little short today? What happens if we're a little short? I'll talk to my guest.
I think you skipped the story.
Yeah, you skipped the story.
Oh! We had a miscarriage on this show. That's why we're going to be short. Okay, this story is... No wonder the teleprompter was bouncing off. My apologies. This is a really big deal. I saw a link to this article on a pro-life page, and I was skeptical. Then I found an Axios, and this absolutely makes sense. And here's why. You guys remember I was talking about the governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam's comments about abortion and partial birth. It's just very disturbing to most people. So according to Axios, the recent debate over late-term abortion, which was fueled by measures in New York and Virginia, which loosened abortion restrictions toward the end of a woman's pregnancy, or at the end. I mean, when she's giving birth, she's not pregnant, caused a dramatic shift in public attitudes toward abortion policy. This is from a Marist poll. Marist is not at all some kind of partisan poll. They're very respected. They just like Gallup. So this is not something where they're manipulating the results. And the results were crazy. Okay, go ahead. Scroll up. The poll found Americans are now as likely to identify as pro-life as they are by pro-choice, 47%. Last month, it was 55% pro-choice, 38% pro-life. So that was a 17-point difference, which for polling to change that dramatically in a month is almost unheard of. And it's very clear that to say pro-choice, given the issue is now like, look, the child is fully formed and you're killing it as the mother is basically dilating. Are you comfortable with that? I think very few people are going to be like, this is something, even if they think it should be legal in extreme cases, this is something that they're not going to be comfortable with, at the very least. The survey also found that 80% of Americans support abortion being limited to the first 3 months of pregnancy, which is up 5% from last month. And also, Marist has been polling America's attitudes on abortions for over a decade. This is the first time since 2009 that as many Americans have identified as pro-life as they have identified as pro-choice. But what was most significant is that Democrats, significantly those under the age of 45, are leading the shift. It went from 34% of Democrats identifying as pro-life versus 61 last month. Last month, it was 20 and 75. So that's a 14-point gain for pro-life Democrats. Among Americans under 45, 47% identify as pro-life, 48% identify as pro-choice. In January, it was 28 and 65%. So the head of the poll said this has been a measure that has been so stable over time. To see that kind of change is surprising, and the increased discussion of late-term abortion in the public forum in the past month appears to have made the biggest difference in how people identify on the issue. If you watch Dave Smith on my show, you're welcome. And if you watched me and Dave on Real Ass Podcast with Luis J. Gomez, we went into this at length. And to have this and just be like, I'm fine with it, and you know, to say pro-choice, that's going to be a hard bullet for many people to take. Republicans have been on the offensive about this issue since the State of the Union when Trump – typical – I love the corporate press. Trump seized. It's always seizing. Republicans seize. Trump seized on the outrage over Virginia governor's comments and the passage of a New York law to promote a congressional ban on late-term abortion. In December, the Department of Health and Human Services proposed a new rule that would require insurers send customers separate bills for coverage provided for abortion services. And on Friday, Trump administration issued a new rule banning organizations that provide abortion referrals, like Planned Parenthood, from receiving federal family planning money. And Axios healthcare editor Sam Baker points out that by far the most significant thing Trump has done on abortion is replacing Judge Kennedy with Brett Kavanaugh. State abortion restrictions will very likely be upheld no matter what public opinion is. So this is – I can't think of any issue other than – let's suppose terrorism after 9/11, where there has been double-digit change in a month. It's very, very rare, especially something like this, which has been so heavily an issue in the public forum for such a long time. And I think this is what happens. I'm going to credit this or blame this regarding your position on social media, because it's very easy when you have three networks where present, you know, pro-choice, when you have, what's her name, Michelle Wolf on her canceled Netflix show, literally having a celebration of abortion. And then you have these things and people just talking blithely about, oh, yeah, it's 9 months along, it's fine. And it's like, you know, this is not – at that point when the baby is fully formed, it's really hard to, with a straight face, say this is just about feminism. I mean, that's not a cogent argument for people to have. Okay. Now we're back in the saddle.
Nice pickup.
Yeah.
Pro move.
Yeah, that's right. I went from God's abortions to real abortions. Okay. Reuters. Reuters is reporting, so that as we gear up to the May European Parliament elections, which is going to be a major, major, major deal, there's tea leaves to follow as to what's going on. Do we not have a photo of Matteo Salvini? Let's put him up. There he is. I like that. That's a good picture of him. A right-wing coalition has won a regional vote on Sardinia. In an outcome that could spell trouble ahead for the Five Star Movement, which is part of Matteo Salvini's coalition in Rome. According to a projection, after 80% of the vote was counted, Christian Solinas, who is the candidate from Matteo's Forza Italy, had won around 40%, well ahead of the incumbent center-left at 33%. But most importantly, the Five Star Anti-Establishment Movement, which is in coalition with Salvini and had won 42.5% of the vote in Sardinia in the national election a year ago, won just 11%. The center-left candidate conceded defeat. The winner is a senator of the League. Excuse me, not Forza. The senator's a senator from the League. The winner – so why can't I talk today? It's the praying mantis. It took my soul.
It has that effect on people.
It does. They're very disturbing animals.
Especially when they look like flowers.
I think it's worse when they look like dead things.
I don't expect the flower to eat me.
Well, do you expect the twig to eat you?
Touche.
Yeah. It's just, oh, God. Yeah, they're very, it's interesting how many, let me, off the top of my head, how many animals can I think of that look like dead leaves? There's a frog. There's fish. There's snakes. There's chameleons, an entire family of them. Mantids. Birds.
Middle American hunters like to wear camouflage just like dead leaves.
But those look like live leaves.
Well, if they stay still, they're like dead leaves.
No, they're green. These are brown. All right. Anyway, Salinas, senator from Matteo Salvini's party, the League. In regional elections, the League fields candidates as part of an alliance with rightist and center-right parties. Sardinia is the sixth consecutive region to go from center-left to right since the center-left Democratic Party was ousted from power in March. And this underscores the center-left's ongoing crisis in Italian politics. But more importantly, or as importantly, it highlights the declining fortunes of Five Star, because the party, which has never won power in any of the country's 20 regions, played down the importance of the result. See, it's one thing to be anti-establishment and say both parties suck and both sides are bad and we're going to govern well. But once you're in office, you have to basically pick left or right and make those choices, and then the luster is very quickly gone. It suffered a similar reversal earlier this month in the region of Abruzzo. Monday, Five Star's leader Luigi Di Maio, who's like 30 years old, he's very, very young, Matteo Salvini and Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte were all quick to rule out any repercussions on the government in Rome. "We must not overemphasize a regional election," said the Prime Minister. He says, "I don't believe the results could have any consequences for the national government." And Di Maio said nothing changes for the government. He said he will soon unveil plans to reorganize the party, including scrapping the policy of always running alone at local elections. Those are normally won by broad coalitions, including numerous so-called civic lists, which represent local interest groups. In Sardinia, there were so many of these that no single party won 13% of the vote. It's kind of like how in New York politics you have the Republicans and the Democrats, but you're also going to have the Working Families Party, the Conservative Party, the Liberal Party, and very often a candidate will run on several lines, and basically it's a very weird system. The national coalition in Rome has appeared increasingly fractured in recent weeks, with disagreements between Salvini's League and Five Star bubbling up over a series of issues, including the construction of an Alpine tunnel. That is really funny. That's really funny. So here we're fighting about a wall. There they're fighting about a tunnel. "We will build the tunnel and Portugal will pay for it." The construction of an Alpine tunnel and which side to support in Venezuela's political crisis. Because Five Star are populist. Salvini is far right populist, you would call him. So obviously he's going to be against Maduro. So it's interesting if they are for Maduro. May's European Parliament election is going to be a test that could affect the balance of power in the government. That's going to be some crazy, crazy stuff. Oh, in May, my book's out. I keep forgetting that the book is coming out. By the way, I just want to give you guys a few quick notes on Philadelphia, which was a lot of fun. Philly gets a lot of heat and hate, and I don't understand why. We took the train there. By the way, taking a train is so much more fun than taking a plane, because you don't have that panic when you're rushing to the airport, even though you have to rush the train the same. And the train station is usually going to be central to the city you're located in, as opposed to the airport, which is going to be far removed. So it's going to be a schlep from the airport to your location, whereas the train, you get there, you're pretty much in the city. So I had a blast. Everyone was telling me that Philly is less safe than New York. That might be true. I did not feel it's unsafe at any time. I did have lunch with Maj Touré from Black Guns Matter, deep in the ghetto. And he gave us the debriefing on how to stay safe there, other than having a gun, which, of course, I did not have. But it was at Ralph's, which was a really good cheesesteak place. I had chicken. I'm not a cheesesteak kind of person because I hate cheese, but we had a lot of fun. Tomorrow, we are going to be covering some really funny stuff. I can't get into it yet because I don't know what it is. But until then, I will wish you sweet dreams. I hope they don't have diabetes.